Our test for this morning is a healing test. And it's one that I'll be honest and say that it's one of a type that kind of just borders together for me. It's the archetype of Jesus is walking around the road and pulls over and heals somebody. And on it goes. And it's common enough that I think we do somewhat regard it as such. Well, it's just one more healing test. But listen to it from the perspective of the person being healed. And especially from the purpose and the point of view of someone having hope. This is Luke chapter 18, verses 35 through 43. As Jesus approached Jericho, a blind man was sitting by the roadside begging. When he heard a crowd going by, he asked what was happening. They told him, "Jesus of Nazareth is passing by." Then he shouted, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." Those who were in front sternly ordered him to be quiet, but he shouted even more loudly, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Jesus stood still and ordered the man to be brought to him. And when he came near, he asked him, "What do you want me to do for you?" He said, "Lord, let me see again." Jesus said to him, "Receive your sight. Your faith has saved you." Immediately, he regained his sight and followed him, glorifying God and all the people. And when they saw it, they praised God. Sometimes hope comes easily, or it can seem that way in any case. I always envy somewhat those for whom this is where they live, of just like when there's a challenge, you just rise to it and it's there. But I think for many of us, hope as in my hope is outside of myself, it's something that comes a little bit further on down the chain when we're presented with a problem. Sure, we hope that we're not inconvenienced, we hope that all goes well, but coming and saying, "Well, I hope that there is someone ultimately to save me," it's not really there. Let's just think of an everyday hiccup. I don't know, it's been in the news, so your flight is canceled. Well, what do you do? And right away you have your checklist of what are my resources and how do I go and how do I get from point A to point B and who do I know around here that who I could call that I might be able to crash with if worse came to worse, and where else might I be able to fly to, and on and on and on and on. Last week when I was traveling, I had that contingency list out and ready to go when I was standing by the agent's desk and they said, "Oh, gee, we had a maintenance issue." And okay, let's start checking the connections. Man, we just can't catch a break. It was Southwest. And of course, I was on a schedule and a tight one at that, and I just started looking at my phone and trying to go. Fortunately, 5 minutes later, they found the switch that I forgot. And that was that. But nevertheless, when we have a problem, our first response is generally one of planning and ambition, more than simply, well, what is our hope? And of course, that's all to the good, and I think it's what we're primed for, after all. Our North American lives and the way that we lead them allow us a great deal of power and freedom to act on our own behalf, and we want to be responsible, good thinkers. And we often think in this way, even in the most dire situations. You get the awful diagnosis that no one wants to hear. And we move from, well, this is what's going on, to, okay, what are our options and what is the plan, in the same conversation, pretty much right away. We want to know how to proceed, and sometimes getting to researching our way out of a problem rather than needing to consider, man, this is big. Where is my hope? We often only express hope after all the other options are gone, after what we can do is expired. Other places and in other situations, the list of now what is considerably shorter. So the language of hope is a much more lived reality and far more real. But whether we seek our options in our power or hope in which that which we cannot control, we always do well to recall the one in whom our hope resides, no matter what. Our hope is in Jesus. And that makes all the difference. As I said initially, our story for this morning is one that does speak of hope. But it's not really transparently so. Say what you will about this man trying to grab Jesus' attention, but he was operating in that region of pure hope. He was just one of the fixtures of the people on the street, the people that we pass every day and that we know and we don't know all the same. If they had cardboard back then, I'm sure he would be holding it. But then when he knows that there's something else going on, he reaches out in the only way that he can, and even desperately so. And he yells out, "Have mercy on me." I'm sure that he's tried whatever adaptation would have come his way, but this response, it's not really a strategy or a method or anything else, it's just one of taking a chance of simply saying, "Oh, Jesus is coming by? Son of David, have mercy on me." Shh! Don't interrupt him. Don't stop him. You don't need to. Son of David, have mercy on me. And in that was the whole plan. And the one who is the hope for the hopeless does stop, does hear, and does listen. What is it that you want me to do for me? Your faith has saved me, saved you. and he is restored to the glory of God. This is one who is on the margins, off on the other side, is the one who connects with Jesus and expresses hope and finds welcome in return. It's a simple story, to be sure. One more time, that Jesus stops and heals. But it's also a story that reminds us that we always need to know where our hope is bound and to behave accordingly. I don't know about you, but my contingency plans don't often include, okay, how do I place this in the hands of the one in whom I hope? And prayer is not high on the list of the minor and major catastrophes of life, even though it has and always will buoy me up. I know through the various episodes of our lives, I can name any number of situations where I know that prayer has made all the difference. But yet, when I have a problem to solve, it's not where I automatically go. Founding my hope in the movement of the divine is not an automatic response. And too much of the engineer trying to think my way out of the box rather than to simply even stop for a moment and say, I'm not alone in the box. Jesus is here too. Sometimes I need to be reminded to stop and cry out, for Jesus, the healer of all, is near to hand and ready to act. It's so easy to silence ourselves that we don't need to cry, no, I'm okay. Or to be silenced by others, you're doing all right, it's all right, you can be okay. We can deal with the judgment and skepticism of what we think people might think of us when we struggle to voice our needs and express our need for the one who cared for us the most. Yet Jesus is always ready to listen, prepared to hear, and ready to heal if we can remember to reach out. I think it's this connection of different ways of hoping and being united in hope even more so that makes our connections around the world so edifying. Where we have a plan and a footprint as well as hope, many of our brothers and sisters around the world, especially in the southern hemisphere, anchor us to the far more immediate and acute sense of hope. Somewhere in my various treasures, I have a framed picture that I have not yet set up from our last move. And yes, that was 4 years ago. As a picture of a group from that I was a part of in Bogota alongside a family who was hosting us. And we met them one afternoon. I'll just call her Jessica. And Jessica and her husband met us upstairs in an apartment in the back alleys of Bogota. And they welcomed us as visitors, a handful of people trying to put flesh on the sister church relationship by coming and bearing witness to what they had to offer and what they had to teach us. And they told us their story, they're on the run and in hiding, so much so that I kind of thought that it was a bit of a bad idea to have a bunch of gringos come through the door and say, that's weird. And they even showed us the letter that said, if we find you, when we find you, you will be no more. And it came last week. And yet with them, they sat there anticipating new life. Jessica was expecting a couple of months, and they spoke with absolute confidence of, well, the visa will come. We'll find a new home. We'll find a new way. Because this is what God will do for us. Because this is our hope. They gave us our sermon. When Christ is for us, who could possibly be against us? And I keep the picture, not because I know how any of it turned out, or where they are now, but simply because there are people who witnessed to me of hope and a promise, their presence, and a reminder of where hope resides, and a reminder of my broader church family. We need our family, both in and out of the church, to remind us of that which we do not automatically come to ourselves. And I admire the hopeful faith of those whose needs and gifting bring them to the place of prayer far more readily and far more easily than I do. And I don't say this to say, oh, isn't it great that the people who have less resources can have a deep spiritual life, and isn't that part of the tragedy of having less resources? No. I see it in envy. Here are people whose faith, whose presence, whose reality seems to put my faith to shame. Their faith and their hope is that which I admire and reminds me of my need to be ready to challenge my own. We can easily forget that by being bound together as family, we're not just there as a great connection of Anabaptist people or Christian people or whatever people, but rather part of the body who are giving gifts to each other, for the building of all. We may well say, well, this is the people who we need to help because they need help, and forget about what do they have to give to us. Help because they need help, of course, but only because it is the compassion and the way and the will of the one who binds us together in being part of the broader church. We help each other, and we help each other grow. The way of the body is the way of Christ, which would call us to know each other as part of each other, as was planned from the very first. We can be inspired by the stories of the many around the world who we can rightly call brother and sister and admire their faith for what it is. A faith like ours, in its own unique gifting, and its own unique benefit for us. When we come across the distance and across time and across language, and yes, across disagreement as well, we don't come together because we have a common theological ancestor, though we do. We unite not because we agree on every idea of the way to be people of faith. We do not. It's not any of the easy commonalities that we can name that makes this fellowship of culture and people viable, except for one that we claim and that we probably proclaim essential truth. That our hope rests in Jesus Christ, the one who hears our cry and answers in grace. And not just our hope, but indeed the hope of all the beloved creation resides in that one singular individual. It is a hope that the world needs for the big insolvable problems of this day and every day. It is a hope that we need ourselves in our own lives when we are left tongue-tied and unable to cry out, even when Jesus is near. And we do well to remember that even that around which we can feel most hopeless, our lives are never beyond hope. There is Christ. There is life. And in that, there is always hope. And in Christ and in this body, there is always more to it than what we can ever imagine. And that is something to celebrate. And that is something to hope on. And that is something to live through. We are 2 years in front of the 500th anniversary of Anabaptism. 498 years ago, yesterday, some guys got a harebrained idea and said, "Rebaptize me now." Or to put it their way, "Baptize me for the first time." And that's how it all got started. And it's a big deal because that one decision has gone on in many ways. And there are already plans well underway to celebrate and to have renewal efforts and thinking. There's a conversation of what does it mean to read the Bible in an Adventist Baptist way together, our founding modus operandi. And there's even the intent to bring together a version of the Bible written with footnotes from the Anabaptist perspective, and to speak from it that way. And there's much and much there. And there'll be much to do and much to celebrate, and rightly so. But we will always do well to recall that it's not our historical happenings themselves that bring us together, but rather the way that we have found it and the way that we are now actively hoping in the hope of all people in Jesus Christ. This is where we are drawn, and this is where we're always invited to reach to and call for and give thanks. For this is where our hope is. And this hope is what makes us one. And this hope will last far longer than any of our families or any of our groupings ever will, as Jesus brings us each home. May we hope in that always. Thanks be to God. Amen.